Coffee in Space is a podcast by S. Daniel Smith that puts the best in established and up-and-coming science fiction and fantasy writers in front of you, their readers. Dan's goal is to help you learn more about who they are as people, how they write, and how they live. Whether you're listening to this podcast at home, or in your car, or somewhere in between, Dan hopes to transport you to the crew lounge on an intergalactic spaceship, where you can have a cup of your favorite coffee with science fiction and fantasy authors. So sit back, listen in, and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, it's Dan Smith coming from my house in Virginia Beach, the coffee-drinking castle that I call my home. I have Mark DeJager with me today in the studio virtually to talk about his books. He is the author of the fantasy novel Inferno and the upcoming sequel to that book called Fire Sky. Mark, thanks for having Coffee in Space with us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with you. Who's Mark DeJager?
He is a South African living in London and has been living there for about 20 years now. He works full-time and writes to preserve his sanity in whatever spare time he can drum up.
And so follow-up to that, obviously, I've got to ask, why did you leave South Africa and move to London?
Purely economic reasons, really. Working over there, it wasn't going anywhere, so we thought we'd give it a go. Sort of sold up everything, moved over on a bit of a shoestring budget, and managed to find up our place.
And I can't imagine, I think if I remember your biography right, that you're into banking. So I'm sure there's good salaries in banking, but I can't imagine moving from South Africa, any city in South Africa, to what is one of the more expensive cities in the world was super easy. So that shoestring budget, I'm sure, is more than just tongue in cheek. It was probably pretty real.
It was very real. We basically sold up everything, and we had enough for security deposit, 1 month's rent, and a bit of food thrown in. So it was make or break for that first month.
Yeah, that's called all in, I think, right there, isn't it? How long have you been writing, and how did you get into it? Were you writing back then when you moved, or is that something that's come along?
No, yes, in so much I was doing some writing, but it was very small pieces. Before I changed my mind and decided to do it seriously, the most I'd probably written was about 5,000 words for a single project. And that was mostly background or stuff to do with playing Dungeons and Dragons. So I used to write a lot of background stuff for games and things like that, most of which never saw the light of day. It was just for me, but I enjoyed doing it. When we moved over here, my wife and I are both very keen readers. I can't actually remember how we got into it, but we went to an event, meet an author event, got to speak into one of the publicists there, and they said, well, if you like this book, we'll send you one if you want to review it for us. We said, yeah, yes, please. Free book, yes, please. And we actually ran a book review website for a few years. It did relatively well, as these things did back in the early 2000s. And at some point we said, well, started talking to authors, it demystifies the process a bit, and realized that they're just, most of them are just regular people. And I thought, well, why don't we give it a go? And it took a while to build up from there, tried a couple of things, got up to about 20,000 words on a few things, and then finally managed to wrote my first fantasy novel, which was a complete mess, but it was a very, very important learning experience. I mean, it was terrible, but it was 130,000 words. It was the first full-length novel that I'd ever done, and the sense of accomplishment that came with that was intoxicating.
Well, 130,000 words is not something to sneeze at. That's a pretty good long. That's a good chunk of words.
I think it took about 14 months to finish that, but like I say, it was an absolute invaluable learning experience just doing that.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things you've said that I want to hit on, because sure. There's things that I'm learning myself right now. So one, completely get the fascination with getting free copies of books. I've really enjoyed, that's been one of the nice perks about being a podcaster, is publicists tend to chuck books my way so that I give them a review or have the author on the show. But it also, the amount of information and craft information I'm learning about writing from authors, and the demystifying process that's happening. Yeah. You know, I'm still writing short stories myself and things of that nature. I've got a novel or two that'll probably never see the light of day. They'll stay in the drawer. But just working on craft and learning about craft from authors such as yourself has been maybe even the biggest perk of the entire podcasting process. So it's been great.
It's great.
I have to ask, though, about D&D. Are you still playing?
I am still playing, actually.
And are you still writing about that, or are you focused on your novels right now?
It's been a nice change, because prior to that, I used to run the games, but I'm just playing as a player now, which is quite fun, although I'm terrible at it. But what I started doing is actually keeping a diary for my character. So it's quite just a little fun exercise after each session, write up his diary notes, what happened, but in the character. It's a nice exercise.
And
just to sort of.
Yeah. And so now I've got a couple of things off that. This is a great interview already, by the way. I'm already learning a bunch. So first of all, how has 2020 affected your gameplay? Because I know I've got listeners who are struggling with that. And so as an experienced player, how are you all handling gameplay right now? Are you doing it online, or what are you doing?
We are. We've tried a few different methods. We've finally wound up using just a messenger chat room, because that's the most stable connection we've got. But yeah, it's been really, really good, because I mean, there are so many nice, really solid online tools for gaming now, like D&D Beyond and places like that, which are, you know, back when I started, it was, you know, it was pencils and paper, and if you lost that, or that's it, you're finished.
Yeah.
But we're using that now. We meet up once a week virtually like this. We've got all our character sheets online so that the DM can see it wherever he is. And there's also now, we sign onto a virtual map, so we can all move our icons through a map that's been designed for us.
That's fascinating.
And everybody can see it.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing.
That's pretty
cool. So it's actually been a really good year when it comes to gaming.
So let me ask this then, again, for the gamers in the group, when we have a vaccine, when some sense of what we used to consider as normal comes back, and something will come back, some normal will pick itself back up. But do you see gaming going back to the way it used to be, around a table with pencils, paper, and dice? Or do you see this online movement kind of taking over?
I think it'll be a combination of the two. I know from our group, who are all of a similar age, you know, it's real life intrudes when you're trying to schedule things for five or six people to get together. I mean, trying to get that squared away is hard.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can do it online, yeah, there's no travel time, there's no parking, there's no worries about that. Everybody can just log in at a certain time. You can put it in your diary. I think online face to face gaming is going to be there to stay there. It's been the same with work, and that when this all kicked off, everybody thought, you know, this is it. That whole idea of working from home was always thought to be a bit of a, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, I'm working from home.
Right.
But everything's changed now. So I think it's here to stay.
Yeah. Okay. So then I know, in fact, I listened to a podcast called Writing Excuses, and they talk about using games like D&D and some others to help hone your character building and world building skills. How has D&D helped you in that world or that arena?
Well, I mean, I think it's been quite fundamental for me. Basically, running that game was my world building, you know, apprenticeship, if you would. You got to hold it together. I mean, I really like the aspect of sitting there and working out, you know, stuff that the characters are never going to touch on. they'll never know about it. They don't know about the trade agreements in the background. But I find that really nice, just knowing that when they went to Area B to Area C, what was actually happening there. I really enjoyed that. So that, I think, really gave me a good foundation for writing on that. And there's trying to control or monitor, you know, five or six characters who never, ever do what you expect them to do is actually really good, because you have to think on your feet. You have to, it really, really, yeah, it's been invaluable for me, I think.
Yeah, you just brought up something that I had never considered, that it could help you building backstory that's never going to actually be on the page. That's a really interesting concept, because I know there's a lot of authors have backstory. Yeah. Even in my short stories, I've got backstory that either gets cut or it never shows up at all. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Something that you as the manager would have to develop in the background to push the characters a certain direction, but they may never actually know.
Well, that's it. It just provides that a consistency, because that character, that side character, you've got a backstory for it. You will know how they would react in a certain instance because of that. It should feed through into their behavior. So I think that, you know, it's great. It's like doing a bit of improv every now and so often.
Yeah, that's another good way to look at that, is improv. So, okay, I gotta stop. So, because we're gonna just keep going down this rabbit hole, and it's taking us further and further away. It's doing really good for that craft development, like I've talked about before. But I gotta get back to the reason I've got you on the show, which is Inferno and your upcoming novel. So let's talk about Inferno first, because this is a really interesting situation for the listeners, and for myself, for that matter, because I've got a copy thanks to your publisher. We get a chance to learn about Inferno and get in kind of on the ground floor of the duology. And then we can read next year, we can have it read in time for your second book. So let's talk about Inferno. That was your first novel, your first published work. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So kind of tell us about it. Give a synopsis, if you will. What's the background for it?
So this is always the hardest question, even though, you know, you've been through it for ages every time. So the story is set in a fantasy world that's currently in the grips of a very large and lingering war, where the two largest kingdoms have been slugging away at each other for probably the better part of a decade. It's a bit of a stalemate, but recently, the tide has started turning. One side's started sort of throwing more wizards into the fight, so they're getting a bit of an edge. And into this complete, you know, disastrous landscape, the main character, Stratus, basically finds himself thrown into this landscape, and he does not have a clue what's going on. All he knows is he's there because he was trying to escape something. Something's hunting him. He doesn't know what, and he can't. He basically is missing a chunk of his backstory. So, when the book starts, the reader basically knows about as much as he does, which is actually quite a fun challenge. So, the story is him basically trying to find his way through this war, figure out his own place, why he's there, and stay alive in the process.
So, I think as a fantasy reader, especially if I'm someone who reads a lot of fantasy, this could be almost kind of a fun little mystery as well. Is this something that the readers can help solve in their own heads, or do you give the pieces so that there's no real doubt about what's going on?
There are people who have pieced it together along the way. There are a few markers in that people will pick up on, maybe particularly gamers. But yeah, it's slow. It is a fairly slow unravel. As he learns more about it, his awareness goes, and he starts interacting with more people, which gives a bit of a broader picture of things. It's written in first person perspective, so everything he knows, you know. So I mean that presented its own challenges. I found writing from his perspective quite fun, but it was really difficult in places because you're limited by what he knows, not what you know.
Was it always first person perspective, had you started earlier?
No, it's always been first person. It was originally, I wrote it in as one piece. It was one very long novel with a completely different beginning. It was a much slower start to it, which is actually the version I went out to my agent with. They liked it, but as you do, you sat down and started talking through it and a bit of what if you do this, what if we do that, and it kind of turned into this two piece. So I effectively rewrote it from that first draft to change the perspective, to make it a bit more immediate at the start. And that was actually really good, because there was a lot of things that could be trimmed and cleaned up on that, and a whole, you know, new opportunities that presented itself to do stuff slightly differently.
Yeah. So we talked earlier in discussing gaming and whatnot, that you could develop background that may not go into a story. Did you find yourself having to, as the author, step away from the character for a little bit to develop what the background was going to be, and then go back into the character's mindset to not know that information? Or how did you approach what was already true, but that the character didn't know yet?
Basically, I try to stay in his head throughout all of it. I had the outline of what was happening outside of this. So I knew everything that was happening around. I knew where he was going to go. But I basically built it all around his experiences. So I took it very, very slowly. And I knew that, you know, I don't know why I'm pointing, because nobody's going to see this.
I was actually just about to bring that. I do it all the time. I'm all the time, because especially when talking about complex plots that have to be boiled down onto the page.
It's like have to move.
There's stuff up here. There's stuff over here. Yeah. No one sees but it's over there.
Nobody sees it, but it's there. So I knew that, you know, event A is coming up down the line, but from his point of view, it's like, what kind of warning would he have about that? None, because nobody's talking to him about it. He doesn't know. He doesn't have enough knowledge of, you know, social norms to see that something he's doing is not acceptable. So most of the time he finds himself thrown into situations of his own making that he didn't see coming.
I'm sold. Like, I'm ready. I've read some of the reviews ahead of time, and I've started the book, and the reviews sound like spot on with what you're discussing. And the way you're telling me that the way you're telling me that the character has to work through these problems just really sounds really interesting. But let me ask this then. Let's talk about the character. Who is Stratus? You kind of talked about the situation that he finds himself in, but how did you create him, or did he also get created as you walked him through his learning process?
No. Stratus is a character that's been with me for a while. In the background, very much in the back of my head, and that the idea that became Infernal started, actually, it was prompted by me spending too much time on YouTube, like I normally do. And there was this clip, can't remember everything that was on it, but basically it was of a tiger in a zoo enclosure, which was stalking some people on the outside. And you could see it so badly wanted to get it in through the glass and that. And these people were just laughing. You know, they were just out for a fun day. And I looked at it and thought, try to look at it from the tiger's perspective. You know, what was it thinking? Is it, you know, where did it come from? Was it born in captivity? Was it from the wilds? What's its backstory? Which is a terrible habit, but quite good. And then from there, that idea of this frustrated prisoner, that kind of, for some reason, hooked up with this character, Stratus, in my mind. Who Stratus was a character from my high school D&D days. I won't mention any spoilers, but he was always in the background for several of those campaigns, and those campaigns went on for about 6 years. So it's quite a strong memory. And the two just mashed together, and I thought, wow, that's really fun. I like that idea of this. That this entity being a prisoner and then getting free somehow.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to like make your, you know, give you a big head, but that's really like, I don't think I could put those two things. I don't think I could put those two things together. It's really impressive. So, okay, we've got your D&D history definitely truthfully playing itself out here. Does the world building also come from there, or did the world that Stratus is in?
That's the really fun bit about this. The world that this all takes place in is essentially, again, that D&D world replicated in a different, slightly more sophisticated version. But that's what made writing it so much fun for me, because a lot of that stuff was, it's bizarre. I can't remember anything that they taught me in school, but the stuff that we played was like, I can do that, because that's next to that. And it's great. Let's look at the old maps for it and everything. So the character was there already. So I basically had to, from where the idea started, I had to reverse engineer it almost to say, well, how did he get there? And then where do I want to start? That's why the first draft is so different, because it began at a different point. So I stripped that back a bit further, and then again sat down and thought, well, what if we do this instead of that, and just move the pieces around a bit. But the process was, it was really, really fun to do. It was a rare day that I didn't actually enjoy the day's writing.
It sounds like it would be fun. As you rewrote the first part of it to become Inferno, and as you have, I assume, incorporated that second half of that original draft to be the next book in the series or the duology, did it also have to go through a lot of rewriting to tidy it up, or was it pretty easy to take that second half and just make it into the other book?
The second half, I think, probably kept about 25% of the original draft, because everything else had changed. Where the character had come to by that point had changed as well. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, his perspectives were slightly different and probably less feral than the first version. So that part, the second half was an interesting one to write. But I'm really, really pleased with it. I'm really looking forward to getting it out there.
So let's turn to it now. We've kind of spent a lot of time getting to know the character and the world that Stratus finds himself in. And I'll just break real quick aside. It's always, I apologize for saying it like an American, Stratus, instead of, I think you're calling him Stratus. You're just pronouncing it like a South African in London would pronounce it. And I'm pronouncing it like a Kansas hillbilly. But that is another thing I've enjoyed as I get to know authors from around the world, learning how they pronounce the things that are in their books has been interesting. But here I am sidetracked again. What situation does he find himself in Fire Sky, and what do you do with him there?
So Fire Sky opens immediately after the end of Infernal. So it's a straight flow from one to the other, which I'm hoping that'll, and plus it's because it's, again, first person perspective, I like that, because I know when I'm looking for books to read, I like to go, well, if I've got book one, I'd like to have book two. And because the gap between the two books is quite short and it's in first person perspective, my hope is that somebody can read it and then pick up Fire Sky, and there's no transition period. You're back into the story. But so at the end of Infernal, he kind of puts most of the pieces of his puzzle together, and he gets a bit of resolution on that. But obviously that's only half of what he needs to do. So the second half is basically exploring it's almost like, be careful what you wish for. Because all through Infernal, he's been trying to get to point A, and then he gets to point A, which is, say, for example, the top of a hill. He gets to the top of the hill, goes, fantastic, made the top of the hill, and then it looks up the size of the next hill and goes, there's still I've done this thing, I've sorted out this problem, but now that I've got the knowledge of why that problem existed in the first place, I have to go back around and solve it, then resolve the situation that got him into this mess in the first place. And that is quite honestly a titanic struggle. I had so much fun with that.
So is there room for, we haven't talked about this, folks, I don't know your discussions with your agent or the editor, but is this no way around it, a duology, or is there room for more of this story?
I would really like to explore the world, but more, write more in the world. There's a couple of the secondary characters that are with him through both books, and I would really like to take the story ahead from maybe using them as a main character. The end of Fire Sky, it's a solid end. It's not you know, no one's left hanging on at the end of it. So it is written as a two-part story, but the world goes on. I'd really like to explore most of it. He'll still be there. You know, he doesn't go away, but I'd really like to explore the world a bit more. There's some stuff that happens to those secondary characters that makes them really, really interesting by the end of Fire Sky.
Yeah. Well, I hope, you know, as I get to know the character from reading it, I hope you'll get the chance to do that. I think that'd be pretty neat. Tell us how we can get to know you better. Websites, Twitter, whatever, wherever you're at. How can we follow you, get to know you, learn about when these books are coming out, things of that nature?
Well, I did try have a website, but I am hopeless at maintaining it. So that's kind of fallen by the wayside. That said, I am on Instagram and Twitter. That's where I'm most active. People can follow me there. You can search me by my name. My handle on both is Gergaroth, which is Gergaroth. Strange name, but yeah, this sounds a bit sad, but that is also a throwback to gaming.
I was going
to
say, it sounds like that sounds like a name of a character in some script somewhere.
Yeah, when I was first making the accounts, every name I wanted was taken, and I didn't want to be like, you know, Goblin King 5001. So I thought, what name won't anybody else have? I was like, oh, I know this unpronounceable name.
That's great. Well, I'll link to them so folks, they're in the show notes, so that
brilliant.
Make it a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, but I keep those up to date. Particularly Instagram's quite nice on that. I like the features good. On that.
Well, I'll definitely link to them. Hopefully you get some new followers out of this and some folks who want to keep in touch. And of course, folks in the military, fans of science fiction and fantasy, will probably go take a gander at some point here in the future.
No, that'd be great.
Mark, thanks for having some time with us today. I've really enjoyed having you on the show.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And folks, thanks for listening to this episode. Take a look at Mark's writing. Get a hold of his book wherever you buy your books. Remember, as you get closer to the Christmas season, to support independent booksellers, if at all possible.
Always.
I think anytime we can help them out, it's a good day. And then anytime we can help out authors like Mark, it's a good day. So folks, that's Mark DeJager. I will put all the links in the show notes and go take a look at the stuff. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I can't wait until we have a cup of coffee in space again someday.